Welcome to Dark Corners with David Allan Voiles. Dark Corners is brought to you by Gestalt Media, an independent publishing company dedicated to serving independent artists. Dark Corners is a horror podcast and may not be suitable for all listeners. Therefore, discretion is advised. Season 2 consists of episodes written and narrated by David Allan Voiles, based on a story suggested by the Halloween-themed musical work Witch Works, created by dark ambient musician Mombi Uhlman. The 13th episode concludes the season in October of 2020. Chapter 7, Little Breath Sucker. Want me to sweeten that up for you, Gran? Esther Thompson's piercing blue eyes twinkled in her wrinkled face, and she nodded.
Please.
Deirdre took the bottle of Bailey's from her large purse and poured a generous dollop into her grandmother's coffee cup. Esther took a sip, closed her eyes, and hummed with pleasure.
Thank you, child. That hits the spot.
Deirdre smiled and asked, So how are you getting along? Staff here at the manor treating you all right? Esther nodded again.
Well enough. The new ones get in and out as fast as they can. They've heard the stories of the crazy old bat in 107.
Deirdre set her own cup down on the end table beside her chair and smiled. But those are just stories, aren't they? Esther looked back without smiling as she seemed to ponder how to respond. Finally, she spoke.
The gates have been opened.
Deirdre frowned. She'd been so sure that her grandmother's dementia had been overstated, that the old woman was much more in touch than she put on. But this sounded like some of the old crazy talk coming through again. What gates, Gran?
O'Bannon's gates.
Harold O'Bannon's been dead since 1983, remember? And the factory burned down in 54. I don't think there ever were any gates.
Not talking about that kind of gate. Deirdre, you need to be careful. Trouble's afoot.
I don't know what you mean.
Daniel's come back, hasn't he?
Yes, I told you he had. Looks like he might be staying longer than he had planned, too. Deirdre picked up her cup and sipped, hoping that the conversation would return to familiar, normal ground. Esther leaned forward in her rocker and said in a low voice,
He can't leave. O'Bannon won't let him.
Granny, what are you talking about? O'Bannon's dead. Esther shook her head.
He wants Daniel. He's been calling him.
You dreamed this? Deirdre asked. The old woman nodded, and Deirdre sighed. Why would Harold O'Bannon be calling Daniel?
I don't know for sure, but there's something you and Daniel need to know.
Deirdre set her cup down and leaned back in her chair. Okay. What's that?
Harold O'Bannon is your grandfather.
What? Deirdre exclaimed in disbelief.
Yours and Daniel's. Your mother, Colleen, was his daughter.
In spite of the bizarre things the old woman was saying, Deirdre had never experienced this degree of clarity in her. She seemed as lucid as anyone else she knew. Okay, Deirdre said slowly. Mama was adopted, we all knew that. But O'Bannon? What makes you think now that she's his daughter?
I've always known.
The old woman took up her cup and drank while Deirdre waited for her to explain.
When I worked at the mansion, there was a woman named Angel Whittier who came to work there in the late 40s. Real pretty girl. O'Bannon had his eye on her, and not long after Angel had been there, she got pregnant. She disappeared before she had really started to show, but since I had been kind to the girl, she trusted me and she told me that she was going to have a baby.
But how do you know her baby was my mother?
Angel told me that O'Bannon was the father. She was too afraid of him to refuse his advances. She said he had promised that he would take care of her and the baby. In fact, he was almost obsessed about the baby. But then she disappeared, and I feared that he had had her killed.
How do you know he didn't?
Well, I don't. But I do know she had the child. The timing of when the Davises got their adopted child was too close to be a coincidence. And O'Bannon was just so involved in their lives once they had that baby girl.
Deirdre nodded thoughtfully. Mama didn't talk much about growing up with the Davises, but I remember her saying that Mr. O'Bannon would just appear at the farm sometimes for no apparent reason. She said he and Mr. Davis would meet in the parlor behind closed doors, and then O'Bannon would ask to see her. He often would give her a doll or a toy. Esther leaned back in her chair.
Watch your girls,
she said with narrowed eyes.
The gates are open.
Daniel and Laura carried their wine glasses from dinner into the family room where Warren motioned for them to take a seat on the couch. You guys take turns putting the girls to bed? Laura asked. That's sweet. And it makes sure you each have some special time with them. Yeah, it works pretty well. We found that rituals with regular routines make going to bed a bit easier. Brush teeth, put toys away, pick out PJs, listen to a bedtime story, give out goodnight kisses. Same schedule every night as much as possible. Very smart, Laura said. The putting away of the toys was Deirdre's stroke of genius. She's kind of a fanatic about having an uncluttered house, and that includes the girls' room. Everything, and I mean everything, tucked away in their proper places and closets and toy boxes. I resisted the idea at first. I mean, can't the kids' room look like a kid's room? But this way has worked out well. They're allowed to pick out one doll or stuffed animal for the night as part of the ritual, which they love doing. And I avoid stepping on crippling Legos in the middle of the night and teaching vocabulary the girls really don't need. The three adults laughed, and Warren settled back into his easy chair. So, Daniel, how does it feel to be the heir to the O'Bannon estate? Warren grinned as he leaned back in his big lazy boy, being careful not to spill his wine as he did so. I don't know, Daniel said as he ran his hand through his hair. That's all pretty mind-blowing, assuming that any of it's even true. You probably know Laura's been helping me, well, sort some things out as it is. Warren smiled sympathetically. I do want to hear more from Deirdre about this conversation she had with our grandmother once she gets the girl settled. But you need to keep in mind, this information is coming from someone with severe dementia. Well, I think I finally got him down, Deirdre said as she entered the living room with a carafe of white wine in one hand and a large wine glass already filled in the other. I'm just going to put this right here so you can refill your glasses whenever you want, she said, placing the carafe on the coffee table. This is definitely a two-glass night for me. She sat in one of the matching easy chairs, which she and her husband obviously used nightly, and smiled at Laura and Daniel. Did you give them? Yes, I did, and don't you start with me about it, Deirdre snapped, interrupting Warren before he could finish his question. I've gone over this with Dr. Green, and he agreed that a tiny amount of Benadryl wouldn't be a problem as long as we monitored it and only used it on rare occasions. I am declaring tonight a rare occasion. Laura's eyes widened at the mention of using Benadryl on toddlers as a sleep aid, but as she was meeting Daniel's sister and brother-in-law for the first time, she kept her professional opinion to herself. Deirdre sipped her wine while Warren explained. The girls have been having night frights lately. They wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares and can't get back to sleep. And most recently, they don't want to go to bed. Skye's especially weirded out, Deirdre said. She's the more vocal of the two, and she says that her dolls won't be quiet, that they say mean things to her. Deirdre made air quotes when she said mean things. Well, that is pretty freaky, Daniel said. Yeah, it is, said Deirdre. But she's got to get over it. I think Amber would probably be okay if her sister didn't get her all worked up, too. I don't know. Amber tells me some pretty weird stuff from her dreams, Warren said. I don't doubt it, Deirdre said. But Skye's the one who talks about it the most. I can't help but think her imagination is triggered by the stuff Skye says. How old did you say they were? Laura asked. They'll be 3 next month, Warren said. That's young for nightmares, but it's not that uncommon, Laura said, especially for children who seem a bit precocious, like your girls. She ran her finger around the rim of her glass and asked, Do you think they could be night terrors rather than nightmares? What's the difference? Warren asked. Night terrors are absolutely terrifying. The children shake and cry and may not even recognize their parents during the event. But those episodes may actually be scarier for the parents than the kids, since in most cases the kids eventually settle down into a restful sleep and often don't even remember what happened. No, the girls definitely remember these, Deirdre said. They can tell us specific details about what their dolls said to them or what their toys did. Yeah, amazing stuff, Warren said. Like mentioning Rose. Laura felt Daniel stiffen on the couch beside her, and Deirdre closed her eyes and breathed in deeply through her nose. Rose was our first child, Warren explained to Laura. We lost her 11 years ago. She was just a little younger than the twins are now. I'm so sorry, Laura said. Please, don't feel you need to talk about this for my sake. No, it's okay, Deirdre said. Talking about it, I mean. We've talked about it plenty in therapy. Enough to finally be able to have another child. Or two. She looked at Warren and raised her glass to him from across the room. Warren smiled and raised his glass back to her. It's still painful, of course, Deirdre continued, but I finally come to some level of acceptance. Sometimes bad shit just happens to good people. That's the bottom line. But we hadn't talked about Rose with the girls, though, Warren said. That's what makes it so weird about what Skye said. What did she say? Daniel asked. Deirdre answered. Out of the blue, she says, Mommy, I don't want to play with Rose. I was shocked, of course. I asked her, Who is Rose, sweetie? And she said, The little girl. That freaked the hell out of me, I've got to say. Because like Warren said, we've never mentioned Rose to the girls at all. Deirdre took another sip of wine. So I asked her then, Where did you see this little girl? And that's when Amber spoke up and said, In the woods. And Skye nodded. So she was telling you about a dream, Laura said. Well, yeah. Deirdre answered. We would never let them play in the woods alone, or even in the yard. Kids are disappearing all over Maria Bay. And then there's the sheriff's son getting murdered. I'm not even taking them to daycare anymore. Of course, Laura said. I was just wondering if these experiences happen during the day, like at nap time maybe, or at night. Well, it was during the day when she told me, Deirdre said, but I don't really know when she had the dream. Is that important? Probably not, Laura said. I was just curious. Silence filled the room for an awkward moment while the four lifted their glasses almost in unison. A movement down the hall caught Daniel's eye. I didn't know you guys had a cat, he said, relieved to be able to talk about something else. Warren and Deirdre looked at each other with puzzled expressions, and Warren said, We don't. I just saw a black cat trot from one of the back rooms into the girls' room, Daniel said. Warren stood up and headed down the hall immediately with Deirdre right behind him. Laura and Daniel looked at each other, and Daniel shrugged. They too got up and joined their hosts down the hall, where Warren was just about to push the door, which had been left open slightly. When he did, Deirdre gasped. Looking over her shoulder, Daniel saw a black cat sitting on the chest of the child that lay in the bed closest to the window. It crouched so that its partially open mouth hovered over Amber's mouth, and its ears were tilted back so that they resembled horns. "Get off her!" Warren shouted and charged into the room. The cat turned toward him and hissed, its green eyes glowing in the dim light provided by the single nightlight. Before Warren could strike it, the cat sprang off the bed and shot past the group standing in the doorway. It streaked through the hall and into Warren's study, and then out an open window where it vanished into the darkness. Deirdre rushed to Amber's bed and sat beside her daughter. "Amber, are you all right, sweetie?" she said, trying to speak in a calm voice, although she was close to tears as the child began to slowly stir. "Check on Sky," she directed to Warren. Her husband stepped over to the other bed and sat and gripped his daughter's shoulder lightly. She did not move, but he could see her chest rising and falling in a slow, steady rhythm. "She's okay, I think. Just deep asleep." "Wake her up and make sure she's okay," Deirdre said, and she turned back to Amber and pressed her hands on the little girl's cheeks and forehead. "Wake up, sweetie. Wake up." Daniel and Laura looked at each other. "Stay right here in case they need medical attention," Daniel said to Laura. "I want to check something." He dashed down the hall and back through the family room to the front door. Stepping out onto the front porch, he paused at the top step and looked out into the gloom of the front yard. He thought he could make out the shadow of someone standing just beyond his parked car. "Hey!" Daniel shouted. "What are you doing there?" The sound of footsteps behind him in the house caused him to turn to see his sister and her husband, each holding a sleepy child in their arms, approaching the door. Laura followed behind them as they spilled out onto the porch. "What is it?" Warren asked. "What'd you see? Was somebody out there?" Daniel turned back to look at the space behind his car. "I thought I did, but I don't see anyone now." He took his phone out of his pocket and turned the flashlight on and shined it out into the yard and driveway, but nothing out of the ordinary could be seen. "Let me get my mag light," Warren said. "Laura, do you mind?" They walked together over to the couch where Warren laid the sleepy child, and Laura sat beside her and stroked her hair. While Warren rummaged through a drawer in the hideaway that stood against the wall, Skye did not even open her eyes, but just nestled into the thin afghan that Laura folded around her. Deirdre settled into the large easy chair with Amber, her eyes darting nervously around the room. Warren flicked on the flashlight and joined Daniel on the porch, and the two of them stepped out into the yard. After circling the house and searching the perimeter of the property, they came back into the family room where Deirdre and Laura looked at them expectantly. Warren shook his head and shrugged. "Nothing." "You didn't even see that damn cat?" Deirdre asked. "No," Daniel answered. "Nothing." He scratched his head and grimaced. "I'm sorry I got you all stirred up. I thought I saw somebody standing out in the driveway beyond my car, but I guess it was just a shadow." "How did that cat get in here?" Deirdre said, not even trying to keep her voice low. In spite of the activity and the voices, neither girl awakened. "I don't know," Warren said. "That window hadn't been opened in, well, I don't think any of these windows have ever been opened. We have central air, so I don't even have screens on them. But I guess the girls opened it sometime, which let the cat get in." "I don't think the girls can open those windows," Deirdre said, frowning. "And they haven't ever shown interest in going into your study unless you were in there. You don't think you might have opened it for some reason and forgotten about it?" "No, I'm sure I would have remembered doing that." "Would you?" Deirdre stared at Warren, who stared back in a way that made Daniel think there was some unpleasant history between the couple that he'd rather not know about. Deirdre shook her head in frustration. "Let's just get the girls back in bed and settled for now. We can fight about the window later. Laura, you're a doctor, right? Would you mind?" "Of course not," Laura said. She placed her fingers on Amber's neck as she checked the child's pulse. She nodded and smiled at Deirdre and then said, "Warren, we should check the girl's pupils, too. Do you mind waking Sky?" After Laura had checked both girls over and determined that they were just very sleepy from the Benadryl, but otherwise okay, The two parents, each with a sleepy child in their arms, headed toward the bedroom. "Let me get the covers for you," Daniel said, scooting around to get in front of them as they approached the bedroom. When he got to the bedroom door, he froze. The others gazed in shock, too, as they looked into the room. Dozens of stuffed animals and toys were positioned all around the room, turned so that they faced the doorway. They sat on the bookshelves, on the two small desks, on both beds, on virtually every possible flat surface in the room, a clear challenge to anyone who entered. On Amber's bed, also facing the grown-ups in the doorway, sat a small stuffed bear, a ballerina doll, and two grinning miniature clowns. That concludes this episode of Dark Corners with David Allan Boyles. Music for Dark Corners was written and performed by Mombi Yulman and can be purchased at mombiyulman.bandcamp.com. For my latest projects, you can always find information at my official website, davidallanboyles.com. And I invite all of you to join our Dark Corners Facebook group, where you can find background information on posted stories, previews of upcoming stories, and all kinds of other dark content. Hope we meet again soon in the Dark Corners.